Thank you for listening and subscribing to the Brilliance Security Podcast. Hello, my name is Steve Bocut, and I am an editor for Brilliance Security Magazine. Brilliance is an online digital publication dedicated to the security industry. Our mission, and thus our name, is to illuminate the intersection of physical and cybersecurity. We cover both of these security domains by publishing original content about threats, hacks, products, and security strategies. We hope you will enjoy this podcast and visit us at brilliancesecuritymagazine.com. Welcome to the Brilliant Security Magazine podcast, and thank you for joining us today. We sincerely appreciate your listening. We have an exciting guest today. Today, our guest is Dr. Sean McAlmont. Dr. McAlmont is the CEO of Ningio Cybersecurity Awareness Training. We're going to be talking about how individuals and companies can build a culture of cybersecurity. Before I bring Sean on, let me give you a little bit of his background. As I said, Dr. Sean McAlmont is the CEO of Ningio Cybersecurity Awareness Training, and he's also one of the nation's leading education and training executives. Prior to Ningio, he served as president of career and workforce training at Stride, Inc., had a decade-long tenure at Lincoln Educational Services, where he was president and CEO, and served as CEO of Newmont College of Computer Science. His workforce and edtech experience is supported by early student development roles at Stanford and Brigham Young universities. He is a former NCAA and international athlete and serves on the BorgWarner and Lee Enterprises boards of directors. He earned his doctoral degree in higher education with distinction from the University of Pennsylvania, a master's degree from the University of San Francisco, and his bachelor's degree from BYU. And with that, welcome, Dr. McAlmont. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you for having me. And please call me Sean.
Okay, Sean. I will do. I'm really happy to have you on today. I think this is going to be a fascinating episode. I am a big advocate of cybersecurity training. I think it's probably the most effective thing that we can do to protect ourselves, our businesses, and our families, and our homes. So let's start with giving us a little background about Ningio. I can't believe that any of our audience doesn't know who Ningio is, but I think that there's probably some interesting or unique things that you can share about your company.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. You know, if we first consider some statistics about the human element in cybersecurity awareness, you know, we realize that the number of breaches that we see in a typical period, whether it's annually or otherwise, a high percentage of those breaches are caused by some human element. I think it's been as high as 90% of breaches. I think most recently, the Verizon report showed that it's around 75%, but that's still a substantial number. Mm-hmm. When you think about how bad actors are getting into systems. And so that statistic alone kind of led our founder, Zach Schuler, to think that there's got to be a way to address this differently than most companies were doing at the time. And that was that standard annual corporate training that was an hour or 2 hours. It was cybersecurity awareness. It was sexual harassment training. And we all, you know, despised it. We tried to game the system. We kept multiple screens open so we could work while doing the training. We tried to speed through it. Yeah. And, you know, when that happens, there's not a lot of learning or behavior change going on. And so Zach thought there's got to be a way to engage learners in a different way. And so, you know, he thought about it. And he had a friend who was a Hollywood writer. He wrote for Hawaii Five-0 and CSI, and he knew an animator. And so the three of them got together and they thought, hey, we can write episodes that are micro learning that have elements of adult learning in them. Like, let's keep it a storytelling premise. Let's start with a case study. You know, as adults, we like to know what happened. Tell me what happened so I can learn from it and I can move on. And so they created this episodic approach to cybersecurity awareness that was based on real breaches. It would be a 30-second intro, like a case study, and then a story written around how it may have happened and how it resolved. And it just caught on like wildfire. And so the company started as a content-first company and really grew dramatically. I think that it's really important to note that, again, going back to how adults learn, in the workplace, it's got to be contextual and digestible in a way that keeps us interested and motivated. And so that's how Ninjio started. From that point, as a content-only company, you know, we've moved on to showing that awareness training. We've built a platform that allows us to do simulated phishing, collect data that shows vulnerabilities for people based on what they're clicking in terms of those bad links, those simulated phishing links. And based on those vulnerabilities, we offer yet another set of training that's 60 seconds long based on the vulnerability. So, you know, Steve, sometimes, let's say at the end of the day on a Friday, you get an email from your boss that says, you know, I need this done immediately. Click this link and go into this site and you'll see the instructions. And that comes from a bad actor. In 3 seconds, you've let them into your system. And so that vulnerability of urgency or fear is real. So we assess that from looking at the data and what you click, and then we add training to address that vulnerability. Over time, we see that there might be an individual risk profile. And if we can reduce that over time through those episodic moments, it actually reduces the risk for a company. So that's how Ninjio started. It was really looking at the human element, how adults learn, finding an approach that kept them engaged, and then adding to that approach over time with a platform or a SaaS background to it.
Interesting. That's fascinating. So first of all, I wanted to comment that because I mean, you talked on the social engineering aspect, and because social engineering is such a big part of cyber threats as we experience them today, and it seems to me that training is probably the most effective thing that we can do when it comes to social engineering. If it's a technical attack, you've got technical things that can happen in the background, and you're screening and you're scanning and you've got your logs and all those kinds of things. But when it comes to social engineering, much of what we can do is centered around training. So I appreciate the fact that that's the approach that you've taken. And I don't think that I was aware that you offered more than training. So you actually do some of the simulations and those kinds of things that other organizations do as well. So it's training plus it's the simulated phishing attacks and those kinds of things that kind of help the organization understand what their profile or posture is in regards to cybersecurity. So that was something that I learned. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Good.
So I think we primarily want to talk about what businesses can do. But before we get into that, I thought it would be interesting to focus just for a minute on individuals and families, right? I mean, we all get these emails and attacks, and we get them not only at work, but we get them, the social engineering attacks, we also get them at home. So what are your thoughts about that? And is there a role for Ninjio in helping families and individuals protect themselves?
It's a great question. You know, we for many of our customers, we offer family use for a number of the episodes. That makes sense. And you know, I would say that, you know, as individuals at home, we still struggle with passwords.
Right.
You know, we've said that passphrases are what we should shift to. Because they just make us less vulnerable in so many different ways. I think that the way AI works today and you know, different types of machine learning, I mean, there are just machines out there that continually churn out, you know, based on social engineering, words that make sense to you. And at some point, they're going to land on a password that lets them in if you're not using phrases, if you're not using a password manager. And I think, Steve, also, you know, when those emails come in, and my wife is always asking me, is this legit?
I get the same thing. Look at this, honey. What do you think?
And I say, hey, what does the URL say? And it's some, you know, garbled. It's not from American Express, that's for sure. But I think being aware, like so aware of the various threat vectors, as you said, social engineering, we all have a social profile, a footprint. There's so much information and so many connections that can make a threat feel so close to us or personal that we let our guard down. So I think that the level of awareness of the types of threat vectors is really critical. And that's why we have family use rights for many of our clients that use Ninjio content. You're going to get fished, you're going to get smished. I mean, I think that people are seeing all types of mobile attacks coming in now. The awareness is critical. And also, you know, making sure we use multi-factor authentication. And facial recognition anytime you can. I think that the number of layers that we can add on in terms of protection at home keeps us, unhackable, if you will, or creates yet that human firewall to go along with the technical firewalls that we're using otherwise. But I think looking at email addresses, extensions, URLs, for those emails that come in, it's just a practice I think we all need to make sure that we're engaging in regularly.
It makes total sense because the line between work and home has become so blurred. It's not like for many of us, it's not like, well, I have all of my devices and things at work and they're separate and they have nothing to do with me at home. And that line is blurred. Many of us work from home. And if not, devices come with us from home to work. So that's one thing that we need to consider. And the other thing I think is that threat actors are becoming so much more sophisticated. Gone are the days when if it was a Nigerian prince that wanted to share his wealth, we could say, oh, well, that's not right. Some of these things are getting pretty scary in how real they look and how convincing they can be and how much, like you alluded to, personal information that they have about you that you would certainly, your natural tendency would be thinking, oh, this person knows me because they've mentioned something that they couldn't know, or I wouldn't think they should be able to know if they didn't know me, that kind of thing. So
absolutely.
All right. So let's turn our focus a little bit back to the business side of things. And what are some key practices or protocols that companies can do, regardless of their size, to bolster their cybersecurity defenses? And I think maybe some of the things that you've mentioned for individuals and families apply also to businesses.
Yeah, I think everything I mentioned on the personal side for home applies at work. You know, we are so technically driven and reliant. I think, you know, technology really is becoming just the norm for everything we do at this point. There are many, many entry points for a potential bad actor. You know, I think about just at home, you know, game consoles today it's essentially a PC that has connection to the internet and your Wi-Fi, your smart TVs, your phone. I mean, you'll go along all of the devices. That is true and even more so in the workplace. I mean, we're using all kinds of applications. And I think that, let me start from the broad and I'll go narrow. Having a mission-driven approach to security, I think, is really critical. Mm-hmm. And that starts with the CEO or the executive team. Yeah. I think that if you really want a secure culture, it has to be woven into the fabric of the organization. And I think training ends up being one component of that. But, you know, we've seen companies do some really innovative things. I mean, leaderboards and making sure engagement is high across all divisions of a particular company. We have a client that has about 70,000 users. They've got about 8 divisions. and their engagement with Ninjio content is somewhere above 98%, which means 98% of those employees are watching every episode every month. Mm-hmm. And the follow on, you know, the anchoring cartoon that we have, and others as reminders of the message in the awareness video. That's impressive. And they have reward and recognition around that. And again, the leaderboard, and no department wants another department to be ahead of them. Or no department wants to be the one that lets a bad actor into the system. So with all that said, they've built a real strong culture around security for their company. It's positively driven, it's reward based, and it's not punitive. So I think that it's created this culture where they want to learn, they want to see the next episode, they want to engage in it for the benefit of their department and overall security of their company. And so that's one example that I thought was very interesting. Also, you know, as companies grow, the bringing on internal expertise, it can be fractional. You know, it can be just an IT position that has a cyber security experience. But overall, ultimately, you need that expertise. It's kind of watching your system, helping train employees on an ongoing basis. And that's 24/7. You know, without that, you know, you're relying on people in different positions in the company to, you know, manage the technical security. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very difficult. So I think it's just another thing that companies need to think about as they're growing, and probably earlier than historically. And then, you know, I think that we think about the human element. We want humans to be unhackable. And so that sort of human firewall concept, I think, you know, endpoint protection and monitoring is just as important. I don't think companies can take the risk of not having a technical firewall and strengthening their human element from small to large. However, you know, you end up doing it, you've got to have that protection for the human element and technology.
Yeah, but it really resonated with me what you said about the example of leadership, because I don't care what you're doing in your organization. If the leaders of the organization don't take cybersecurity seriously, that will filter down to every level within the organization. And it also made me wonder, and I don't know how you would even quantify this or if you know the number, but Ninjio must have developed a ton of content in order to keep it engaging, so that you're not just watching the same, you know, episode over and over again. Do you have any idea how many episodes or how much content, or how do you measure that?
Yeah, we've done nine. We're going on our ninth season. Each season has 12 episodes, and then we have all kinds of other, you know, pieces as well. But we've got over 100 episodes that we've created that cover various breaches. And again, real life circumstances. In our episode in December is in production right now, and it's going to cover a major breach that happened recently.
Yeah. And do you find the research side of that? I've found as a journalist that not everyone wants to expose what went wrong when things go wrong. So in your development of this content, do you find that a bit of a challenge to get, whoever the latest, you know, breach of the day was to help you understand why, what went wrong?
Steve, it's a great question. You know, sometimes we know what happened because it's widely reported.
Right.
And we will take that as the genesis of the episode. And then that's why we have a writer will build a drama or a story around it. So we will use the first 30 seconds to lay out what happened to company X. So you'll know that the type of attack vector they used, what the breach was, and then we'll write a dramatic 4-minute episode around the rest. And that has worked for us because you don't need to know you don't need to know their forensics and what the FBI said and did they pay a ransom or not. We just needed to know that this was the attack vector. They got in using this method, and that was bad. That's all we needed to know, and we'll write the episode based on it. Now, if information comes out that is much more specific about what happened and you know how it went, we'll incorporate that. But typically, that's why we have a writer around the rest of it.
Excellent. Okay. All right. So we a couple of questions I wanted to ask you. It came to my attention a few weeks ago that you had this kind of a generous offer during the month of October. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and you had this pretty generous offer. Tell us about that. And this is the end of October, so maybe you could tell us, was that successful? What was the offer, and what was the results?
You know, each October, we give companies, organizations, associations, an opportunity to see our content free of charge. And, you know, it's part of our effort to be, you know, good citizens in this effort. We you know, our mission is to make humans unhackable. And that's whether you're a customer of ours or not. We really feel that we've created content that is intriguing, entertaining, and educational for all citizens. So whether you're a formal customer or not, in October, you get a chance to see a number of our episodes. And we think that the community will learn from that. And it's always, widely utilized and enjoyed. And I would say that, we feel pretty confident about, putting the content out there because, the October offer is not going to go on where you're getting new episodes over and over again. But for episodes that have already happened, those attack vectors are still alive well and exactly. being used by bad actors. So we feel that they still have value. And we really are fortunate. We get a lot of good Gartner recognition. Voice of the customer ratings are typically the highest continually year over year because of our approach. And so we just like to promote that as much as we can. I think that, it's always successful in our minds. I think when anybody can get that content for free, they take it.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I'm so grateful that you guys do that. I think that's a great service to the community that Ninjio is doing. Now, for those of us who are like expert procrastinators, we didn't get around to it in October. What do we need to wait till next October? Is that what we need to do? Your content?
It's a great question. You can always go to ninjio.com and ask for a demo or ask to speak to someone. And we will send content out for people to view constantly. And you can see a couple of episodes through our website as well. But so it's not over. You won't see as much, but you can still see some.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. Well, I appreciate that. All right. So let's look into the future a little bit. And so beyond Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So is there any plans that you can share with us? Any things that the future might bring for Ninjio and its customers?
You know, Steve, you asked me the question about the other things that we do. Mm-hmm. So for many years, we had the ability for our customers to contract with us for simulated phishing. And it was kind of an afterthought. You know, we were really about the content first because our methodology was around that episodic training and learning and behavior change over time. But we took the last year and really built this technical platform that allows us now to merge the awareness training, the simulated phishing, the data we receive, and then the additional training that we call Ninjio Sense, that are 60-second episodes based on those vulnerabilities that all lead to an individual risk score and then an overall aggregate company risk score. And that's new. So we unveiled that just a couple of months ago. And really, that's what our future will be for the foreseeable term, where we think that it's not just the awareness training, it's not just the simulated phishing, but it's the combination of both And then incremental training along the way that really changes behavior and affects that culture. Mm-hmm. So it's a more full solution. It's a very unique methodology. And we've been rolling that out over the last couple of months, as I mentioned, and we're adding features and functions all the time. And so that's really what our future will look like.
Interesting. And so I think I'm gathering from what you said that the customization comes from the individual threat. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, so if I work for an organization and they're using that service and I fall for a particular kind of phishing lure, that's going to customize the training that's offered to me, right? So look, this is what you did wrong, and here's why it was wrong and how you could have, you know, prevented that, what you could have looked for. You know, the simplest scenario is the one we talked about before. Did you actually check the URL or where that came from? Or, you know, where's that link going? That kind of thing. So is that connection between the simulated attacks and the content that I'm going to be given, there is a connection there, correct?
There is, and we want to avoid over training, right? And so if you look at a given month, Ninja would typically show the episode in the first week of the month, and then there would be, you know, reminder and follow-up, an anchoring cartoon, which is just a still that reminds you of the theme of that episode. Other types of ongoing reminders over the next 3 weeks of that particular month. What we're doing now is showing the awareness video, the 5 minute or 4 to 5 minute video early in the month. The simulated phishing goes on in the background by the third week. And over time, once we understand the vulnerabilities of that particular employee, in the third week, they will get a 60-second training. And it's another animated training, but it's tied directly to that vulnerability. So yes, we're tying the vulnerabilities from the phishing, the simulated phishing, the data we receive based on someone's profile, and then tying that next training to it. The next training won't have an assessment tied to it. It's really 60 seconds of storytelling tied directly to that vulnerability. And it keeps, again, it keeps it light, fast, and not seen as a burden to an employee. And it's not punitive. It's not saying, hey, you are wrong or sort of bad in terms of how you looked at your simulated phishing opportunities, but it just serves it up for them. So they know that that's the vulnerability they have. And the training is, again, very, very quick. But over time, it changes behavior.
Yeah. Well, that's very smart. So because it's going to be relevant to the user as opposed to irrelevant, because the easiest way to lose somebody's attention is to keep telling them stuff they already know. But tell them something they don't know, right? And that's how you, with the phishing attacks, then you can figure out what they don't know, and then you can feed them content that is based on what they still need to learn. So that
exactly
that makes a lot of sense. All right, so we're about out of time. I've got a couple other questions that I want to run by you. I'd like to, if we can, come away with some actionable things that the audience can do. So any recommendations that you might have about resources, online communities, support systems, how can they gain more knowledge, stay informed, or maybe contribute to others learning more about cybersecurity?
I'll tell you, Steve, we're seeing forums pop up in every industry. And I think that many of them are industry specific. I spoke to a real estate and escrow industry association the other day, and we had probably four episodes that tied to, you know, wire fraud in particular that we shared with them. And I'll serve on a panel for that same industry coming up, because they've seen a lot of attack vector activity coming their way around, wire fraud in particular, and the way bad actors are going against, you know, that industry, It's very specific. I mean, there is malware that will change wiring instructions. They'll search out PDFs with wiring instructions. They'll change account numbers automatically in the background, and have somebody wire their money directly to a bad actor's account. When that happens, there's really no recourse. Just imagine, you're a young family. You've saved up everything you have to buy your first home, and you wire those dollars to a bad actor, and they're just gone. It's devastating. And so that community in particular has a lot of activity in this regard. And I would say it's happening for the financial services, K-12, medical, where you have sensitive information and personally identifiable information. It's got to be protected. So lots of communities happening. I would say search out based on your industry.
Okay. So, and every industry has its community, its forums, organizations that you can belong to. And I would suspect that many, many, if not all of those at one time or another are going to be addressing the topic of cybersecurity awareness and the threats that industry faces. So that's great advice. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So to wrap things up here, our last question, we always kind of use the same open-ended question for all of our guests. The essence of this question is, what should I have asked that I failed to ask? But the question is, what else do you think our audience should know either about cybersecurity awareness training or about Ninjio?
You know, I would say two things. If you go to ninjio.com, you'll get a better explanation of our methodology than I gave today. You know, I think that you got a couple of videos that show what we do and how we do it. And I think it would be worthwhile going and seeing that. Secondly, you know, Steve, one of the things we didn't talk about was the role of AI, generative AI.
Good point.
I mean, it's becoming pervasive. I think it's making bad actors smarter and faster, and humans more vulnerable. Simulated phishing campaigns are getting smarter. As you said earlier, you know, if you can keep scraping someone's social elements out there, you're going to make a pretty compelling argument to them that you're somebody that they know that's in their circle. And that's happening just at the speed of light. So we need to be even more aware and vigilant in how we look at those attack vectors coming at us. And I think companies need to start looking at how they use AI to fight AI. You know, I think that we've got to be smarter. Our technology needs to recognize when AI is coming at us or a threat vector is coming at us even more quickly. And so our endpoint protection, in addition to our human element training, is absolutely incredible in this day and age.
Yeah, fascinating. Thank you for bringing that up. In fact, that's such an important topic that maybe we'll have you back on and we'll talk about AI and both from a threat actor perspective and a defender perspective and see where that technology is getting us. But
absolutely.
Thank you so much, Sean. I've really appreciated you being on today. This has been a fascinating conversation. We appreciate your time.
Steve, thanks for having me.
All right. And a big thanks to our listeners for being with us. And please remember to like and subscribe if you find this podcast interesting. And join us next time for another episode of the Brilliance Security Magazine podcast.